Hello everyone, welcome to the first Shark Snippets podcast, the bite-sized podcast for anyone who loves or wants to learn about sharks, skates and rays. My name is Josh and I'm a marine biologist who specialises in shark ecology. For those of you that don't know, each podcast episode is broken down into three snippets. The first being species of the week, then sharks in the news, and finally sharks in science. I can't wait to share some shark knowledge with you guys, so let's jump into species of the week. So I'm kicking off the first episode with one of my favourite species, the great hammerhead. The great hammerhead is the largest of 10 hammerhead species, with the biggest confirmed individual being 20 foot or 6 metres in length. They can weigh up to 1,000 pounds or 450 kilos and are believed to live between 20 and 30 years old. Great hammerheads are found in warm tropical waters across the world and are commonly found between a depth of 3 feet and 300 feet, it's about a metre and 100 metres, in coastal areas as well as offshore. Key hotspots for these species are the warm waters around Florida and the Bahamas. Interestingly, great hammerheads are known to migrate north to cooler waters in the summer, and a study in 2011 by the University of Miami tracked a single hammerhead migrate up the Atlantic coast into the waters around New Jersey, which is a huge migration. Compared to other hammerhead species, great hammerheads are easily identifiable from their large size and their large pointed first dorsal fin. For those that don't know, the dorsal fin is the vertical fin found on a shark's back, and the horizontal fins on the side of a shark are known as pectoral fins. Like all hammerhead species, the great hammerhead has a unique hammer-shaped head from which their name derives. The scientific name for their head is known as a cephalofoil. All sharks have a unique sensory organ called the ampullae of Lorenzini. This organ consists of jelly-filled pores that can detect minute electrical currents made by their prey. The hammerhead cephalofoil contains an abundance of these pores, and therefore they use it like a metal detector to sweep backwards and forwards to locate one of their favourite prey buried underneath the sand, stingrays. Once a hammerhead has located a stingray, it will pin it down using its head and begin to feed. Often hammerheads are seen with stingray barbs protruding out of their jaws and heads. The great hammerhead is listed as an endangered species on the IUCN Red List. For those that don't know, IUCN stands for the International Union for Conservation of Nature. And it's the standard organisation that compiles all known data and assigns the vulnerability status on all known animal species, both marine and terrestrial. Great hammerheads face a high risk of extinction. Their large dorsal fin makes them an ideal target for the shark fin industry. And like many other shark species, they are often caught in drift nets or longline fisheries. Unfortunately, great hammerheads suffer from high rates of what is known as post-release mortality. This is where the stress from being on the hook of a longline or even a fisherman's rod and reel is too great for the shark, and even if it is released, the shark will often die soon after. Due to this, at the beginning of 2012, it became illegal for fishermen in Florida to land hammerhead species in Florida waters. If you have the ambition to dive or see this magnificent species of shark in the wild, feel free to contact me on Twitter or via email and I can send you in the direction of a responsible operator. Sharks in the news. So, the first news story we are going to delve into originally stems from the hot topic of shark drumlines off of the coast of Western Australia. So to give you some background information, in January 2014, the Western Australian government introduced a policy to capture and kill large sharks in the vicinity of swimming beaches through the use of baited drumlines. This was often referred to as the Western Australian shark coal and was introduced due to the death of 7 people from shark attacks between 2010 and 2013. Great white sharks were the main target for the drumlines, despite them being a federally protected species in Australia. And at the time, there was huge uproar and opposition from animal rights activists, marine scientists, and even celebrities. Unfortunately, the policy proceeded without consideration of marine scientists, and the Western Australian government later admitted that they didn't seek scientific advice and that there wasn't any scientific evidence to determine that the policy worked. Drumlines are now back on the Western Australian government's agenda. However, this time round, they are proposing the use of smart drumlines. The difference with smart drumlines is that there is no intention to kill the shark, and instead scientists tag the shark and release it a kilometre from shore. These smart drumlines are being trialled in New South Wales, Australia, and the initial findings are positive, showing that the captured sharks are moving between 10 to 20 kilometres offshore within 48 hours of being caught. It is hypothesized that these movements offshore are down to a fright response in those animals. The families of fatal shark attack victims are coming forward to support the use of smart drumlines and technologies that weigh up the cost and benefit for both human safety and the impact on wildlife. I personally commend the actions of these families and what they're fighting for, despite the emotional trauma that they have. They understand the importance of fighting for both humans and sharks. Shark mitigation is a complex, ongoing issue that will continue to present challenges as human populations increase and humans' use of the ocean continues. It's easy to forget that every time us humans enter the marine environment, we're entering an ecosystem where we are not the apex predator, and we have to understand and accept the potential risks that come along with that. On a weekly basis, I myself freedive in waters where great white sharks inhabit. I'm aware of the potential consequences, but understand the risk is low. We as humans shouldn't be scared of the oceans. However, we should appreciate the power that they hold, and whether it's the waves we surf in or the animals that inhabit it. Next, a positive story regarding a basking shark off the coast of Ireland. Basking sharks are large, slow-moving species that funnel water through their large gaping mouths and filter and consume tiny organisms found within the water. Earlier this week, a 50-foot or 15-metre basking shark was accidentally caught in a fishing trawler's net off the south coast of Ireland. Thankfully, the fisherman battled hard to release the basking shark and succeeded. In the video the fisherman took, the basking shark can be seen swimming away free from the net down into the deep. Often, the association between sharks and fishermen is a negative one. We often instinctively think of shark fishing, shark fin trade, or sharks as bycatch. However, there are often many stories like this that get overlooked by media outlets because they are not the juicy, attention-grabbing headlines that often sharks are the subject of. So if you have a positive shark story, I would love for you to share it with me. So tweet me or drop an email. Additionally, all the links for the articles and media for the news stories will be linked in the podcast description, so you guys can go have a look at them. Now for sharks in science. So for this snippet, we are going to look at a recent publication in Conservation Physiology. The title of the publication is Interacting with Wildlife Tourism Increases Activity of White Sharks. The lead author of this paper is Charlie Hooveniers from Flinders University, Adelaide, South Australia. So wildlife tourism, including shark tourism, is a rapidly increasing sector within the tourism economy. Over the last decade, scientists have begun to increase their research efforts on the effects of tourism on sharks. Some of the current research areas include impacts of provisioning. This is where sharks are directly fed, so think of baited shark dives such as those in the Bahamas. Changes in seasonality, residency, or abundance, and even the effects, the physical effects of divers on sharks. So white sharks are considered a charismatic species and often a target for ecotourism. White shark ecotourism in the form of cage diving is available in Australia, South Africa, the USA, Mexico, and New Zealand. Within each country, multiple tour operators can be at the same location, carrying out multiple expeditions a day. This has led to concerns about cage diving activities altering white shark behaviour. The aim of this study was to examine a range of behaviours and performance metrics in relation to cage diving operations, and to assess the potential effects of wildlife tourism targeting sharks. So this study took place off of Neptune Island, which is one of the key cage diving sites in Australia. A total of 10 individual white sharks were equipped with an accelerometer package. This package is basically an advanced Fitbit for sharks. It measures and records swim speeds, depths, temperature, and acceleration. The package is also combined with satellite tags to determine location and allow the retrieval of the package. The package is attached to the base of the dorsal fin of the shark via a fin clamp. The clamp has a corrodible link which allows it to break off of the fin after approximately 1 week and then float to the surface for retrieval. There are a couple of great pictures showing the package deployed on a white shark, and if you have the chance, check them out in the article. Again, the article will be, or the publication link will be linked in the description for the podcast. In all animals, sharks and humans alike, movement results from muscle contractions which use energy. Therefore, body movements or acceleration is used as a proxy for metabolic rate or energy expenditure. Large body accelerations over certain thresholds are referred to as bursts. So think of these bursts as a sprinting state, for example, when you're running. So the study found between a 10-fold and 60-fold increase in these burst events during interactions with cage diving operators. Additionally, an increase in just average body acceleration was also significantly higher during these interactions, and also the number of ascents, which is the movement from depth to the surface, was also significantly increased when interacting with operators. So from these results, the study does suggest that white shark activity increases during interactions with cage diving operators and can affect the energy use of white sharks. However, the amount of time that white sharks interact with operators is variable, and a typical cage diving day may only result in a small overall increase of energy expenditure. So in order to fully assess the potential impact of cage diving on the energy budget of white sharks, further research is needed to determine the variation between individuals and the amount of time sharks spend in proximity to or interacting with the cage diving operators. In my opinion, if white shark cage diving operations are managed properly and no provisioning occurs, they can be an extremely valuable source to change public perception of sharks. Having been on cage diving boats, I've seen people's immense fear of sharks turned into amazement and admiration in a matter of minutes. And if coupled with education, it can provide a platform of change in public perception, which is still very much needed in this day and age. Well, that's it. Thank you so much for listening. With it being the first full episode, I would love to hear your thoughts and any feedback you might have for me. If you do, tweet me at josh's_wave or send me an email at josh'swave@gmail.com. Direct links for these will also be in the podcast description. Thanks again for listening. I hope you have a awesome week.